from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We're going to try to cover a lot of ground today here on the program. At the very end of the show, we're going to talk about a couple of things that Kirby Smart says Georgia did not show on G-Day. We'll also deal with a recruit that I think a lot of us thought maybe coming to Georgia that's now deciding not to. An offensive lineman's announced his decision to transfer. We'll kind of deal with that, what that means for a UGA here as well. Welcome in Mike Johnson to the program later on too. But let me begin this way, though. And the one thing that I've been trying to say over and over since G-Day on Saturday was that what's going on for Georgia at the quarterback position right now is not a bad thing. You would file this under, if it is a problem, it is a good problem to have. This is the billionaire trying to decide which of his sports cars to drive. You know, this is the, you know, big man on campus deciding which girl to date. You know, there is a lot of good things that go along with Georgia when it comes with what it has going on with its quarterback situation right now. Jake Fromm proved in 2017 that he's a very good quarterback. In April of 2018, on G-Day on Saturday, the incoming freshman Justin Fields may have given you a glimpse that he has a chance to be a good quarterback. It is never a bad thing to have good players, even if you have multiple good players at the same position. But that is not going to stop some from trying to, you know, fan the flames of controversy here and try to sort of be out there with the hottest possible take or the most dire possible scenario for why having Justin Fields and Jake Fromm on the same team at the same time at the same position is somehow going to be a bad thing for Georgia. Let me begin this way with, I thought, a somewhat surprising take from a guy that knows both these quarterbacks well and seemingly likes them both a lot, but I don't like this take from him. It is Trent Dilfer, who you may remember as the former Super Bowl winning quarterback from the Baltimore Ravens when they beat the New York Giants. I guess it was back in the year 2000. Now, Dilfer wasn't a great NFL quarterback, but he was a starter at the league, won a Super Bowl, as I said, and has kind of gone on to be one of the leaders of the Elite 11 quarterback camp that goes on in each and every summer. And Elite 11 is really that stamp of approval that sort of puts you in the rarefied air for, you know, incoming college quarterbacks. You know, are you the Elite 11? Do you win the Elite 11? You know, that is one of those deals that sort of separates you from the rest of the quarterback competition in all of high school football. And obviously the guys that Georgia have been bringing in as of late, Justin Fields most recent, Jake Fromm before that, Jacob Eason before that, these are Elite 11 type guys. So Trent Dilfer, because he's worked with these guys at the Elite 11, knows the quarterback situation at Georgia pretty well. And he was on a podcast, a Saturday Down South, which is a site that covers college football. He was on Saturday Down South, and here is what Trent Dilfer said about Justin Fields at Georgia. He says, he's a very, very special prospect. I like the SEC. I like Georgia. I don't really try to take sides. But here's where it gets very interesting from Trent Dilfer. I was bummed to see him go to Georgia because naturally there's going to be this controversy now, which is unfortunate because you have two really special quarterbacks on the roster, and the reality of it is that one of them won't be there long term. Once again, that's Trent Dilfer, the leader of the Elite 11 quarterback camp, former NFL quarterback, speaking to Saturday Down South. And I don't think that what Dilfer assumes as an obvious point is as obvious as he thinks it is. And maybe I'm being naive. Maybe I'm being, you know, a Pollyanna on this, that these two factions, you know, the you know, Fields and Fromm, that they can't coexist. They can't be in the same place at the same time. But for me, there has always been this possibility that this could work out. There's always been this possibility that even if it seems tough at the onset, that when it's all said and done, maybe there is a way for these two guys to coexist. Because, you know, what Georgia's trying to do here going forward is obviously sort of blaze a new trail for college football. There really is no track record from the past to say the Georgia situation is going to be just like this thing that happened in the past. And oftentimes for analysts like Dilfer, and before he was a coach at the Elite 11, he was trying to be one of these TV guys. And somehow it seems that the only language that the TV guys understand is that this thing is just like this thing that's happened in the past. You know, comparing a current event to a previous event is sort of the go-to crutch for analysts. And they're really aren't a lot of, you know, previous events in college football that feel like Jake Fromm and Justin Fields being on the the same field at the same time, at least the same practice field at the same time at Georgia. So therefore, since it's confusing, since it's new, since it's this kind of thing that hasn't been experienced before, it has to be a failure. It can't work because it's all too confusing to sort of experience something for the first time. And then you start making the comparison to the Alabama situation where it really may be unraveling between Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa. But the fact of the matter is that's unraveling because one guy, Tua, is probably good, and one guy, Jalen Hurts, probably not. You know, as long as Georgia's winning and as long as both these quarterbacks are good, then I think the chances of all of this sort of working out and being fine for Georgia are actually probably increased, even though a lot of the, you know, college football talking heads would say that they are decreased in that regard. And it's not just, you know, Trent Dilfer right now who's talking about this. You had Greg McElroy, I guess, on the Feinbaum show the other day. We were talking about this on SEC Country Live yesterday. Feinbaum puts out this poll on Twitter, and he says, this is Feinbaum on Twitter. If you're watching on video, you can obviously see this. He says, which quarterback's going to play the most meaningful snaps in 2018? Greg McElroy says it's going to be Justin Fields. And what I told Mike Johnson, who, by the way, will join us later on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza today, is that phrase, meaningful snaps, I find that to be somewhat significant because that's not garbage time. That's not playing in the fourth quarter when you're up 35 points. That's being in a close game, you know, coming into a game when Georgia has either a slight lead or maybe even a slightly trailing. That does seem to be coming into a game at the expense of Jake Fromm because you would typically expect the incumbent quarterback, the incumbent starting quarterback, to be in the game in those situations. So it sounds like you can sort of lump Greg McElroy at least into the group of of Trent Dilfer and others saying that Kirby Smart's got a decision to make here in 2018 of how much do you want to play Justin Fields and, you know, how do you handle all this? But there is a chance that all of this works out just fine. Now, I don't know how it's going to work out. I don't know how much Fields is going to play this upcoming season. I don't know over the course of the next two seasons which of these two guys ends up playing the most. I'll admit that I don't know, but when you listen to Kirby Smart talk about these things, he doesn't seem to be too worried. You know, he had every opportunity this spring to sort of ramp down the expectations for Justin Fields. Chose not to do that. He talks glowingly about both these guys right now. I think that Kirby Smart, for the most part, feels like it's a good thing that he has two quarterbacks. I think that's the way that fans should feel, too. As I've said before, you can appreciate Justin Fields, and here on this program we do, you can appreciate Justin Fields without making anything negative about Jake Fromm. There's nothing about Jake Fromm's game to dislike. There are plenty of things about Justin Fields' game to like. These are two good quarterbacks, maybe on their way to two good careers, and as strange as it sounds, there's a chance that those two careers happen somewhat simultaneously here at the University of Georgia. I can't wait to watch how it all plays out. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and we're glad you're with us, whether you watch us on video, a lot of video channels. You can check us out each and every day. We appreciate you doing that at 10 a.m. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Love being on the radio with our friends in the Classic City there. And, of course, in podcast form, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, SoundCloud, the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just glad you have found Dog Nation Daily here today. Now, I'm going to bring on Mike Johnson later on, my partner from SEC Country Live. He can rebut maybe some of the stuff that I just said about Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, because I'm pretty sure he's a little bit more skeptical of all this than I am. And I'm sure I'll hear from Georgia fans on this, too, that it's not as simple as I just described it. That's probably the case. But I also think, you know, this idea that it has to turn into a controversy, that's, for me, almost too much wishful thinking on the part of rival fan bases, or, you know, too much, pot stirring by the college football talking heads there. So we'll talk more about that, I'm sure, in our comment section on video and throughout the program here today when Mike Johnson's on a little bit later on. Of course, as I said, it's all brought to you by Marco's Pizza. And right now, Marco's got a great offer for you. But as I've been telling you, this is only for a limited time, so you got to make sure you act right now. You can meet the boss of all cheese pizzas. It's five cheeses blended together, melted oh so nice on that authentic Italian crust, and right now the extra large is just $10.99. It's a great deal from Marco's. You can check them out online, marcos.com. Find the Marco's nearest you, and you can do like I do with my family all the time. Sit around and enjoy some Marco's pizza, back deck, front porch, in front of the TV when it's raining, whatever you got going this time of year. Marco's Pizza, it makes it a great way to enjoy that. And I'm really glad to have Marco's Pizza here on Dog Nation Daily. All right, let me deal with the Georgia offensive line just for a moment, because there is news about that group here today. And what's been interesting to watch over the course of Kirby Smart's time at Georgia is the incredible transformation that's taken place with the Georgia offensive line. When he first took the job in 2016, maybe not a strength of the team, but over the course of 2017, we saw a great emergence of a very physical offensive line. And back in January, I thought that Andrew Thomas did a great job of describing just how formidable this group had become.
Well, we just tried to change the culture, and basically we just play physical every day. And it starts in practice. We practice hard every day. It starts with our O-line coach, Coach Pittman, and he just pushes us to be the best we can be.
Yeah, so that's exactly what this Georgia offensive line did. They you know, grew in that regard over the course of the season. And as, you know, Kirby Smart has said, the standard that that group set for 2017 is what they're trying to take with them into 2018, that it was good in 2017, but this offensive line hopes to even be better this upcoming season. Here's Kirby Smart on that point.
Yeah, it's a different group because I don't think anybody's in there from the first year, so it's completely different because I'm pretty sure, I mean, Lamont might have been in the mix, and but other than that, it's all new guys, and I think there's a camaraderie any offensive line group I've been around, but Coach Pittman does a tremendous job of them having pride in their double teams, pride in their points, them working to the second level. They work as a unit as good as any group I've been around, and they take a lot of pride in that.
So you heard Andrew Thomas say, you know, this group became noticeably physical in 2017, became one of the real strengths of the team. And you just heard Kirby Smart allude to there that these are new guys, you know, for the 2018, at least some of the guys at various positions, Andrew Thomas sliding over, things like that. And what 2017 accomplished, 2018 wants to maintain and maybe get even better there as really, you know, physical offensive line play becomes one of the hallmarks of Georgia football for many years to come. And, of course, for Georgia, that means that in the spring practice that just concluded, there was an incredible level of competition for open spots. One of those spots, you know, maybe along the right side there where you've got right tackle that's open, or, you know, maybe even right guard where Ben Cleveland did start some last year, but trying to hold off, you know, some guys there. And when you look at Cleveland potentially as a right guard, you look at Isaiah Wilson maybe as a right tackle. He worked there as the number one guy for most of the spring. You see the potential of two giants there on that right side. You know, Cleveland, Wilson, among the bigger players that Georgia's recruited in a recent history. But as Kirby Smart said back during the spring, that may be true. They both may be you know, great prospects, but that doesn't necessarily get him all that excited about what they might be able to bring to the table. Here's more from Kirby.
Size doesn't excite me. What's inside that helmet does. You know, the first time I saw Isaiah Wynn, I didn't exactly get excited, but I was pretty disappointed when he left. So it was not a matter of how they look all the time. It's a lot more about how they play. And I guess if you asked every defensive lineman that Isaiah faced in the season at SEC, they would say that Isaiah Wynn was one of the fiercest competitors, physical guys. Our defense line didn't want to go against him. They love going against Ben and Isaiah Wilson, you know, so they can get up under him. So it's not a matter of size alone. I think the size obviously gives you the ability to stay in front of the quarterback, keep people off, but your bend and your flexibility and the power you create is a lot more important than your size. So those two guys they're in position battles. I mean, just like a lot of guys out there, there's no starting offensive line in my mind. There's some good young players out there that are competing with older players.
So what started in 2017 hopes to be maintained or built upon in 2018. Competition is going to be the bedrock of that. As Kirby just said there, with right guard, right tackle, maybe it does yield a Ben Cleveland and Isaiah Wilson, two big giant guys. And as Chip Towers pointed out on a recent episode of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, the other competition's over there at left guard as well, because for now that position's open too.
Left guard's kind of interesting too because, you know, Kendall Baker was there and started most of the games, but Georgia's interior offensive line got exposed a little bit against Alabama, and that might have been the only team in the country that could expose that. Maybe Clemson to some degree, you know, so it's all relative. But, you know, Kirby, I mean, he's looking to improve all the way across that line. But obviously we'll be watching very closely. I hope we have an opportunity to see right away when those offensive linemen get out there on the field. Solomon Kimmel, there's really a lot of scenarios there.
And, of course, the reason why we bring all this up, as Chip said, a lot of scenarios at left guard, some scenarios at right guard, certainly a wide-open competition at right tackle. We're going to see some incoming freshmen that come in here and compete a little bit as well. While this intense competition's ongoing, and I thought both units for Georgia's offensive line looked pretty good on Saturday, there's also, you know, going to be a guy that potentially gets left out of the mix here. And for Georgia, one guy in particular that may feel that way is Pat Allen. And the Athens Banner-Herald had a quote from Allen's private Twitter account yesterday where Allen says, "After careful consideration and careful talks with my family, my coaches, it's with pain in my heart that I inform you all and Dog Nation that I'm going to be transferring and opening my recruitment from the University of Georgia." That is Pat Allen on Twitter. And it's important to point out here that Allen was an offensive lineman that had some things going for him. You want to go back to last spring. Last spring, Kirby Smart had some praise for Pat Allen and some of the work that he was doing during practice a year ago. Here was Kirby on Allen then.
I think he understands what he's doing better. You know, I think he's more comfortable. He's playing with a physical attitude and a physical demeanor. You know, that's one of the guys I'm talking about. I don't know if we're
playing softer up front or we're more physical on the offensive line. I don't know which one that is because it's hard to tell when you go against yourself all the time. I do know that Pat is getting more movement on some guys than we've gotten in the past at guard. So you got to remember the two guards that are out there right now were not the two guards that were out there last year because one of the guards is the center and one of the guards is the right tackle. But with Solomon and Pat, let's just say like it is, there's a little more mass at the guard positions and let's see if it pays off or not.
So Allen at one point in time was getting some attention and some praise for Kirby Smart last spring, maybe a little bit out of the mix right now. Here on Dog Nation Daily, we certainly wish him well as he looks forward to the next phase of his career, apparently at another school. And for more on that subject and a whole lot more, let's get ready to welcome in Mike Johnson. It's great to have you with us here, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And I'll say hello to Mike Johnson. Of course, check us out 3 p.m. Eastern time on the SEC Country Facebook page, YouTube page, Twitter page, I guess, later on. Today we'll do SEC Country Live there this afternoon. It is the former Alabama All-American offensive lineman himself, Mike Johnson. And, Mike, we'll talk about the Pat Allen situation in a moment. I look forward to hearing a whole lot more from you about that. Let me, though, begin our conversation with where I started our show today, and that's the Jake Fromm, Justin Fields stuff. You know, when you look at Fromm and Fields – do you think, like Trent Dilfer and other people seem to think, that this is sort of destined from some sort of quarterback controversy? Or is there a way that these two really intriguing prospects could somehow coexist together at the same time at the same university? What's your thought on Fromm and Fields here?
I think as a Bama guy that's seen a lot of the same things out of Jalen Hurts and Jake Fromm, that I kind of hold my breath and kind of hope that it can work, right? I mean, I think there's probably three or four or five other schools across the SEC that are hoping that situation can work, really, in the long run and short term. I think short term it definitely has the opportunity to pay a lot of benefits for Georgia. I mean, when you look at what they have in Jake Fromm, a general on the field, a leader, a guy who has the mental capacity, obviously, we've seen, to get them to a championship. And you see the athleticism, you know, the high ceiling for a guy like Justin Fields, and you think, well, we can't keep him off the field either. So you really have two good options for Georgia. I think in the near future, you try to play both of them. You get them both on the field. You have a special arrangement in terms of what they're both trying to do. But I got to be honest with you. In the long run, when you look at how young both of these guys are, I don't know that that works for the next 3 years. I don't know that you have Jake Fromm for the next 3 years and Justin Fields for the next 3 years, really sharing playing time. I think at some point you probably have a starting quarterback and a backup quarterback. I don't know when that comes. I don't know what year it comes or if it comes this season or next spring. But I think at some point you have to make a decision. I just don't think it has to come this season. I think they can work it out and both be on the field and both be big parts of that team.
So here's the point that I would make in response to that. And look, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but I think we're in kind of a new era of college football where you don't really see in the past – talent clustering together at the same schools the way you see it now, where they're really a small handful of schools that get virtually all of the elite players. Between Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, you can sort of pepper in a couple more, but it's really those four, sort of above everybody else. Between that, there's like 5 or 10 schools that virtually get all the 5-star players and a healthy portion of the 4-star players. And that's also going to be quarterbacks now, too. I think the NBA has sort of influenced this. The NBA is kind of a cultural influence. The NBA has super teams. I think recruits have chosen to be a part of college football super teams. That means you're going to have more than one good quarterback on the field at the same time. And for a lot of analysts, Mike, I think they're playing, slow to catch up here that, okay, just because there's nothing in the past or very few things in the past that we can sort of draw a reference to doesn't mean that it's doomed to failure just because we haven't seen a replication of this before.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think that, like I said, I'm hopeful in the same way that a lot of Georgia fans are that can work out. I think we're also in the era of BA, and I think this is what makes this situation so different. We're in an era where these recruits are very well aware of the situation they're stepping into. Does that make sense? I mean,
yeah.
When I was recruited to high school, I didn't know the depth charts at the offensive line at Alabama. I didn't know who was starting at left guard or right tackle or some of the other spots. I just knew that they really wanted me there, and I thought that, that was the best place I could go to enhance my football ability. I think that this day and age, you have a guy like Justin Fields, a lot of people are tweeting at and saying, listen, there's nobody in the world you can't beat out with the size and stature you have and the speed and the arm strength. And so I think there is a little bit of it to where they're kind of congregating around the same teams. But I think also in the back of a lot of these guys' heads, and I'm not saying Justin Fields is like this,
in the back of a lot of these guys' heads is, you know, there's nobody that can beat me out. There's nobody that can do the things that I can do, and why would I change my decision based on somebody else that I think I can beat out of a particular position? I think we're definitely seeing a change in philosophy when it comes to the quarterback position. I mean, look at LSU right now. You look at maybe possibly Texas A&M. You possibly Tennessee being the same way. Maybe even Florida in the near future, it really might be able to utilize a two-quarterback system. And so maybe there's a change in the works. There's not a ton to point to say that, you know, that has a chance and a long-running history of being able to work. There's a few throughout the last 10 years. But maybe you're right. Maybe we are in a period of transition where this is going to start happening at more and more places.
Well, I think that you're also, you know, potentially right here in that I'm sure privately Justin Fields thinks what he thinks and Jake Fromm privately thinks what he thinks. But I think you would join me in saying – I don't really care what anybody thinks. I just sort of care what you do. And as long as you're, you know, your action sort of or sort of team oriented, I don't care privately if you think you're the guy that's supposed to get all the accolades. And the perfect example of this is Jacob Eason, who I'm sure, you know, sitting on the bench in 2017 was fuming. I'm sure privately that was driving him insane because he was former Gatorade Player of the Year. I'm sure he thinks he's going to go to Washington, and when he finally gets a chance to be eligible and play, I'm sure he thinks he's going to prove every naysayer he ever had wrong. But he didn't talk about that stuff publicly. He was never really seen sulking, you know, in any kind of, you know, visible way. So what he thinks for me is secondary. It's all about what he does. And Fromm and Fields, you know, are they as good of buddies as they pretend that they are right now? They may not be, but I only sort of care what they do. What they think doesn't really matter to me all that much. How do you feel about that?
I tend to agree with you on that point. I mean, I think that what a player is thinking only becomes a problem if they, you know, say it out loud. You know, if they think that they're better than somebody and they're not, you know, short to the statement and saying in the public and saying, listen, I'm better than him, I should be starting. I think that's the only time it becomes a problem, and I think that's when you get worried about it. I wonder, you know, for a guy, and again, I'm going to kick it back over to Alabama, like what is Jalen Hurts thinking right now? It's kind of a big deal to me because of the backup quarterback spot, and will they have the chance to run a two-quarterback system? And, you know, a lot of Bama fans thought Jalen looked kind of dejected after the game, looked like he was disappointed himself. I am worried about what he's thinking. I'm worried about, you know, whether, you know, Bama's going to have a backup quarterback next year that is 26-2. So that definitely is on my mind, but I think in terms of what Georgia's going through right now, I think you're right. I don't think it matters what Jake Fromm thinks or what Justin Fields thinks. I think it matters what they do and can they coexist for the time being and take Georgia back to another SEC title.
Let me talk to you about another story that's going on around Georgia right now, and that's Pat Allen's decision to transfer. And before you joined us, Mike, I kind of told the story of the evolution of Georgia's offensive line from a relative weakness in the team of 2016 to strength for 2017, and the way that changed was the physicality, and Georgia's became more physical, and Kirby Smart's been, you know, adamant that he wants even more of that in 2018, wants competition to be the reason why that happens. And, you know, Georgia's going to have a really rock solid left tackle in Andrew Thomas, probably a pretty good right tackle in Isaiah Wilson. Looks like Ben Cleveland's going to lock down that right guard position. Lamont Gilyard, I think, is an all-conference potential contender there as a center. Left guard may be open for right now, but with all this depth, all this competition, there's not going to be room for everybody. And it looks like Pat Allen has decided that there may not be room at Georgia for him. He's going to go elsewhere. For me, there are two issues here, Mike. There's the issue for Allen individually, and there's the issue for the Georgia offensive line. Let me start with the Allen thing, and I know you'll join me in saying this. I'm a big believer, even though I never played the game, if you're not playing, you deserve to find a spot where you can be on the field somewhere. I am for liberal transfer rules. I am for not blocking anybody to go anywhere. Get on the field and play. As a fan, if that meant Georgia Tech or Florida or someone, one of these places where, you know, one of these schools that I don't like, if that's where Allen thought he had the best chance of playing, I'd be okay with him going there. Go back to Miami. You know just anything that you want to do, I'd be okay with that. And I just hope that Pat Allen finds himself a place to play, and I know you would agree with that.
I couldn't agree with you more. And you know how I side on most of these things. It's almost always what is in the player's best interest, because the bottom line is these are not employees. These are still kids. And, you know, we love to use the statement, man, that's a grown man. There's still kids in their minds, especially a guy like Pat Allen. And I think that I actually think this is good news for Georgia fans. You know, listen, we talk about competition. We talk about, you know, the hungriest dog running the fastest. We talk about bringing out the best in everybody. And sometimes you have guys like this that fall by the wayside, that don't think that, you know, that they're really cut out to kind of stick in with that competition. And I'm not speaking for Pat Allen. I can't see behind the scenes. I don't know what Sam Pittman's telling him on a daily basis. But I think the fact that he feels the need to probably head elsewhere means that maybe he's getting surpassed by some of the talent that Kirby Smart's bringing in. I think that I'm with you in saying that Pat Allen needs to do what's best for Pat Allen. It's just that day and age where You know, there's coaches transferring all the time. There's coaches taking bigger opportunities. Why not let players take opportunities elsewhere and, you know, see if it works out for him in his career and his goals?
And I want to get some thoughts from you about G-Day in a moment, but you sort of touched on a moment ago what my biggest takeaway from the game was. Mike, I was blown away specifically by Georgia's second offensive line. This may be a reason why a guy like Allen wants to go somewhere else now. I mean, to think that Georgia's second string right guard or right tackle right now is Cade Mays, that, you know, that Trey Hill's working as a backup there, and Torrey Johnson in his second year in the program, that he's working as a backup. I mean, these are guys that would be, you know, surefire candidates to start for a lot of SEC teams, at least based on what I think I know about them. In plenty of years, Georgia's had starters that I don't believe are quite as talented as these clear backups right now, for Georgia. This is by far and away the best second offensive line I've seen from Georgia during a spring game. To think that Georgia's got 10 offensive linemen who are that caliber, you know, that quality right now, this for me, of all the transformations that Kirby Smart of has been a part of Georgia and the sort of, you know, overarching, you know, big transformation of the program, it is most specifically noticed at the offensive line position, where there are nothing but behemoths all across the board, first and second level right now. If you want to be optimistic about Georgia and what it's able to do in 2018, I think that optimism begins with an offensive line that I just have a hard time believing won't be among the best in the entire country.
I completely agree. The best in the entire country, and I don't have a problem saying this, B.A., as far as the entire offensive line room, that was Georgia was far and away the best offensive line room that we saw all spring. I mean, I think Bama's got some talent at the top as far as that first string offensive line goes. I think that you probably look at a team like LSU, once they're all healthy, they have some talent at the top. Same goes for Florida. I mean, they have talent at the top. But when you look at the two deep, when you look at a guy like Cade Mays, and I did watch Cade Mays, he was so impressive. That whole entire second string offensive line was so impressive for Georgia. And this is, you know, you got to keep in mind, too, if you're a Georgia fan, this is not like, hey, you know, we're going against a second-string defense. They're not that good. I mean, the talent on the defense side of the ball is pretty good, too, right? Right there in the front seven. And so I don't have any problem telling Georgia fans that as far as the offensive line rooms that I saw throughout the spring, Georgia was far and away the best. And I think that as the season continues to grow and you see other teams start to, you know, have injuries across the offensive line, and who are we going to bring in? Who's going to be the swing tackle? Who can step in big situations? Georgia's in a better position than anybody. I mean, you look at the depth problems they have up at Tennessee right now, obviously at LSU, you're dealing with the same thing at Texas A&M. Georgia is in such a good spot to really go 8 or 9 deep across that offensive line, and it's going to pay dividends as you get into that meat of that schedule next year.
Any other big takeaway from Georgia as it finishes spring on G-Day? Anything else that you kind of saw or anything you want to bring up here that you feel like we ought to know about how Georgia concluded its spring?
I just feel like the biggest takeaway for me watching Georgia was seeing these guys compete. I mean, it is very clear to me that entire roster has bought into this Kirby Smart philosophy. And, you know, it's hard to point back at one, you know, particular thing. But look at Jeremy Pruitt up at Tennessee trying to get his guys to buy in, basically saying that, you know, half the guys on the roster quit, that the fans didn't show up. I mean, look at what you have as far as competition goes. Look at what you're trying to replace in the secondary. Look how good that secondary did look. Look at your wide receiver core. You know, how deep they go, how they're battling for balls, how guys are jumping up for jump balls, and even playing into the fourth quarter. It's just such a sign of the culture, I think, that Kirby Smart really has made do a U-turn there at Georgia. It's not something, and it's not like I've watched every Georgia G-Day game for the last 15 years. But the ones I have seen, it just has such a different feel now, where everybody really is competing at such a high level on the field because they want to be a part of this starting roster and this starting lineup for a championship team.
And, of course, what coaches like to talk about now is the transition, what they call phase three. What is phase three here? What happens for Georgia next between now and, I guess, the very end of July, beginning of August, when the official 2018 practices begin?
Yeah, as far as right now goes, you're going to see them really transition into being student athletes. I mean, this is the one time in the year where you really get to take a deep breath. I mean, it's the end of a semester. You don't have any football practice. You're going to have some workouts, but you're only going to be there for an hour a day, really, until you get to that graduation here coming up. And so you're going to see coaches that are, you know, trying to spend minimal time. You know, coaches are, you know, kind of doing the recruiting thing. They're watching film. The camp circuit's starting to get going. And so you're going to see these players really take some time. Most of the time they're going to take away from football is right now. They're going to get in their books. They're going to start studying for their finals. And then you transition into that summer where really, when you talk about SEC football teams, I know it's like this in Athens because it's like this in Tuscaloosa. it is so hot outside, and you're going to start to separate the men from the boys when you get that summer conditioning going. So that's what's going on for them right now. The next couple of weeks, really focusing on grades, and then getting back to that conditioning, getting their body ready to be able to go through that that fall camp and that brutal schedule.
Got about 30 seconds left here. Can I get you to squeeze in a quick thought? Who's up, who's down around the SEC after spring? Can you sum that up kind of quickly, your thoughts overall in the league during the spring?
Yeah, I think after really separating the spring games for me, Texas A&M is up. I really like the way Jimbo Fisher has that offense looking, and I think that defense played with a toughness. It's hard not to look at LSU and wonder how they're not going to struggle when you look at that quarterback position. I mean, I think they have some guys there, but the depth's not there along the offensive line. They're going to really, really rely on that defense this year once again down there at LSU, and I think that's a big deal for Alabama and Georgia fans when you start to look at that roster.
We will look forward to seeing you, Mike, this afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, SEC Country Facebook, YouTube, SEC Country Twitter. We'll be all over the video this afternoon for SEC Country Live. Thanks for being with us here today. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We'll look forward to talking to you later on the afternoon.
Sounds good, Ben. See you in a bit.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always enjoy having Mike Johnson here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Really good stuff from him. Like his evaluation of the rest of the SEC. I always love it, though, when we have one of those topics that sort of overlaps his position, offensive line, with something going on in Georgia. I find myself listening even closer to Mike when there's an offensive line issue. So it was kind of fun talking about the stuff with Pat Allen. And, I said this, obviously some of the non-Georgia fans from time to time will sort of give me grief for being, biased in favor of a UGA, being a UGA homer. I hope that, another bias that I'm thought of as having is a bias in favor of players. What's better for them? What's an opportunity for them? Guys want to play. And if you need to go find a new home to find yourself some playing time, I'm in favor of you being able to do that. I wish Pat Allen well as he moves on to the next level and next phase of his career. That's where SEC Through right now. As we said, check out SEC Country Live this afternoon. And how about this from Tennessee? Maybe taking a little bit of credit for something that does not belong to them. They're not the only school to try this over the course of this offseason, but this is going to get some extra attention because of who it impacts here. The Tennessee official Twitter account puts out, and if you're watching on video, you can obviously see this. It says, be coached by the best, then become the best. And it says the Tennessee football coaching staff has coached Leonard Floyd, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, Tyrann Mathieu, kind of on and on it goes there. And it says 90 total NFL players have been combined to be coached by Jeremy Pruitt here. The problem is all those stars were NFL stars that sort of played for other schools besides Tennessee. I mean, this is literally copying off somebody else's paper here. This is like, let me take your homework, turn it in, and call it as my own here. And Texas A&M tried this with Jalen Ramsey a little earlier, and Ramsey kind of slapped their hand on that. I think it'd be really cool if Leonard Floyd and some of these Georgia players sort of spoke out against Jeremy Pruitt doing that here. I actually think that'd be kind of an interesting thing to see here. And ultimately the takeaway on something like this is, Tennessee's supposed to be better than this. And I got some, comments on Twitter about this as well. Tennessee's supposed to be a program that brags about itself, not brags about things that happen to other SEC schools that they now want to, sort of take advantage of by proxy. That's unbecoming of Tennessee here. And this kind of stuff with recruiting does not work. The only thing that works well with recruiting is establish a long-term relationship where you show yourself to truly care about the player, have authentic connection, authentic contact. Guys don't choose schools because of DBU or, pipeline to the NFL and all this other junk. Coolest uniforms. Relationships are what matters for recruiting. That's why Kirby Smart's so good at it, because he builds authentic, genuine relationships. This is another example of an SEC team who seemingly does not seem to get that. Another SEC story that I want to mention here. There is a lot of talk coming out of Tuscaloosa about Mac Jones and the performance during the spring game. We're going to have some of this for you this afternoon on SEC Country Live. And, boy, I think the real crucial story for Alabama this season, this offseason, is can you keep Jalen Hurts? Can you keep him from jumping ship? I think you need him as your backup. I don't care if Mac Jones outplayed Jalen Hurts in the A-Day game. Hurts is still the better backup option for Alabama going forward. Going to be hard to win a national championship if Mac Jones is your primary backup to Tua Tagovailoa. That's probably just below the national championship standard there in that regard. But once you got players bragging on Mac Jones, all of a sudden, I would imagine that, you know, gets Hurts a little jumpy here, maybe makes him a little bit more nervous. Be careful praising Mac Jones too much, because that praise of Jones may open the door for Jalen Hurts to truly make good on his dad's prediction that he'd become a college football free agent. Speaking of offensive linemen, we talked a lot a moment ago about a Georgia offensive lineman on his way out. Auburn hopes it has an offensive lineman on its way in. His name is Jack Driscoll, and I will not lie to you, I could not pick him out of a lineup. I'm guessing on our video show we have no pictures of Jack Driscoll to show either. He is from UMass. If he makes a decision today, though, we could have some pictures of him awful soon to show, because he's going to choose between UCLA, USC, and maybe Auburn. Now, you know Auburn was in the mix earlier for the grad transfer offensive lineman from Rice, ended up not choosing Auburn, but they're trying to get in the mix here for another as well. Anderson, the previous offensive lineman, ended up going to Texas to work with Herb Hand. J.B. Grimes, the new offensive line coach, trying to bring in Driscoll here. And I say this all the time, and I mean it, bringing in these transfer players, even if they're not great guys, they contribute. They have college experience, more physically ready than the typical incoming freshman. This is one to watch here for Auburn. A couple other quick stories here. Derek Hunter, who we talked to Jeff Sintel about yesterday, did announce that he's going to be dropping his top eight here on this Wednesday as we're recording this show. Georgia obviously expected to be in this. Florida, the chief competition for Georgia, they're going to be in this too. I'm assuming Clemson as well. He went to Clemson this weekend. Hunter is going to be one to watch here, and this is going to be one of those, you know, you haven't seen a lot of Georgia versus Florida recruiting battles in recent years, but you could have a lot of Georgia versus Florida stuff going on here with Derek Rambo Hunter, who does hail from the Sunshine State. And by the way, speaking of the Gators, one quick final story. Bad news for Antonio Callaway, the much-embattled former Florida wide receiver. Also had, is the right way to say this, he had a diluted test going back to the NFL Combine, which counts as a failed drug test. So poor Antonio Callaway, man. He cannot get out of his own way here. Kind of a mess for him. And certainly Florida fans had sort of washed their hands of him by the time it was all said and done. And we'll make that your SEC through. All right, I want to do a couple things here. Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Want to finish up in a moment with a guy that I think some of us thought might end up choosing Georgia, actually choosing a different school instead. We'll do a little quick recruiting nugget here on our way out the door. But before that, I wanted to play you one more piece of audio from Georgia coach Kirby Smart, because, you know, he was asked about what your priorities were for the spring. How did you address those, you know, during G-Day, during the spring itself? And in the midst of talking about these things, I want you to notice something. Kirby Smart mentions two priorities for the spring that actually were not put on display for G-Day. And I kind of find this interesting. Now, he deals with leadership here. We've obviously done a whole bunch on that. He mentioned special teams in this clip. But listen specifically to the two things that Kirby Smart said they spent a bunch of time working on that they didn't really show during G-Day. I thought this was pretty interesting. Here's Kirby.
I think anytime you attack a spring, we're targeting special teams. We wanted to improve our special teams and not be complacent, because we thought we were really good last year. So we developed some more receivers that could play on teams for us. The next thing, defense, we wanted to make more negative plays. We want to give more negative tackles for a loss. We put some things in that we worked on in the other practices, not today. And then offensively, we want to be more efficient with our RPOs. We want to have a little bit more package of some plays that we want to run that we didn't show today. So we felt like we accomplished that. Not necessarily today, but throughout spring, we were able to do that. The biggest thing that we need to do this spring is find out who we are and where our leaders. And I'm not sure we know exactly who those leaders are yet. We know they're supposed to be, but are they willing to assume the role? Because it's going to be forced on them.
At this point, we've talked about the idea of Georgia needing leaders like 3 days in a row, and I guess we'll probably end up talking about that a good bit more too. But for now, that's well-traveled ground. We probably don't need to do a whole lot more on that at the moment. I think the idea of Kirby Smart recognizing just how good Georgia's special teams were a year ago, you know, if you want to talk about how Georgia goes from 8-5 in 2016 to, or whatever the actual record ended up being, meager record in 2016 to in the college football playoff in 2017, the emergence of great special teams may have been part of that explanation more than anything else. When I think about special teams, I don't think about made field goals as much as I think about good field position. Starting field position for your offense, bad starting field position for your defense. How do you create those scenarios? Georgia was good at that in 2017. I think it was good at that because it had good players. And, you know, I expect more from that in Georgia here in 2018, as it does transfer some of those wide receivers over there and let them play the special teams. I think that's a hallmark of good Georgia football. I do expect to see more of that. But the two things that Smart says that they've been working on a lot this spring that they didn't really show a lot during G-Day were, creating tackles for loss on defense, wreaking havoc in the backfield, in other words, and creating an offense that's better at the run-pass option, what he calls the RPO plays there. I think that sets up an interesting thing to look for as you head towards the fall of 2018. A Georgia team that does want to be in the backfield a lot on defense. DeAndre Walker was good at that in situational roles in 2017. Is there even more of that in 2018 with him on the field a lot more? Or is an incoming freshman, a guy like Brenton Cox, who potentially provides some of that for Georgia? And for a Georgia offense, when you think about RPOs, you think about involving the quarterback in decision-making. And for different reasons, both Fromm and Fields could both potentially be pretty good at this. Fromm, because he is such a good quick decision maker, and Justin Fields, because when you think about run pass option, there's also that third option of maybe Fields tucking it and running it himself. I think both the Georgia quarterbacks could potentially be really interesting in a run pass option situation. And it was kind of interesting insight from Kirby Smart there to get a description of some things they worked on during the spring that they did not necessarily show us there on G-Day. All right, as promised here, I did want to mention a quick recruiting nugget before we get out of here. The three-star safety, Kyle Hamilton from Marist, a guy that Jeff Sintel has been really high on for a long time. Hamilton just visited G-Day on a Saturday, and Hamilton's made his college decision, and instead of choosing Georgia, he's chosen Notre Dame. I believe we have, for those on video, the official tweet from Hamilton announcing his commitment to the University of Georgia. So I guess best of luck to Kyle Hamilton as he chooses a different school to go to there. He's going to be going into playing his college ball, I guess, at Notre Dame instead of Georgia. With that, we'll wrap up the show here today. And there's a part of me that's sort of upset with Jeff Sintel on this because – you know, Hamilton was not really a guy that I knew that much about, was not really on my radar all that much until Jeff Sintel had talked him up here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza a couple times. And then all of a sudden, I'm excited about Hamilton. I'm ready to see more of Hamilton, maybe intrigued by, you know, what Kirby Smart saw in him as a player. Well, now he's going to Notre Dame, so, you know, the anticipation that Jeff built for us with Hamilton, I guess now is not going to pay off. But nonetheless, we do wish him well as he goes to Notre Dame. And I'm sure Marist will be good to Georgia here again at some point in time. I also said this point the other day. You know, for Georgia, who as of yet has not gotten a commitment coming off G-Day, based on the way the 2018 recruiting cycle played out, I could not be less concerned about that. Georgia's got a long list of elite commits that are on their way very soon. We'll look forward to seeing that play out. By the way, 185 days from right now, Georgia beats Florida again. Gatorator countdown. We'll see you tomorrow.